सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः।
Just chant all of page 11. Yeah, from Etat down to Atma Satya.
Okay.
You have at the bottom of the page, it says Atma.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the top to the bottom.
Okay.
Etat. Sadhana Chatushtayam. तत्त्वविवेकस्य अधिकारिणः भवन्ति तत्त्वविवेकः आत्मा सत्यः Aranyat Sarvam Nityeti.
So this morning, having gone through the fourth of the Sadhana Chaturshtaya, this fourfold, sadhanas, he then reiterates, Etat Sadhana Chaturshtaya. This is the Sadhana Chaturshtaya. So he's now gone through all of them, including the Samadhi Shatka, this group of six, right? Viveka, say get it. Viveka, do you remember it? Viveka, Vairagya, Samadhi Shatka Sampatta, Sampattihi, and then Mamukshitva. Okay? These are the four. So we have to know them in this way. You have to know these words. There's the Adhikari, the qualified student. The Adhikari. Adhikari Maha is in the plural. Yeah. Could they made the windows this way? So the Adhikari is the qualified student for this Tattva Viveka, for this analysis of what is Tattva, what is the reality, what is the truth of everything. So the Adhikari is the one who has the Sadhana Chaturshtaya Sampattihi. They're endowed with these fourfold sadhanas. Sadhanas means for the Upaya Nishta, right, for the qualities of mind. And the disposition of the person, you know, is such that these are the attributes that would be natural to such a person, okay, to that Adhikari, to some measure. In fact, if you have the Mumukshutvam, all the others will come. But you need the Mumukshutvam as the core, and then the others will come with that. So the Sadhana Chaturshtaya Sampattihi, or Sampanna, whichever, Sadhana Chaturshtaya Sampattihi, you have to be able to break that down. These words, Swamiji uses, they shrivel out of his mouth all the time. The Sadhana Chaturshtaya Sampattihi is the Viveka, Vairagya, the Samadhi Satka, right? The Samadhi Satka, this Shatka Sampattihi, is having these sixfold qualities, and the Mumukshutvam. You have to notice, Viveka, Vairagya, the Samadhi Satka Sampattihi, and the Mumukshutvam. And then this Samadhi Shatka Sampattihi, having these sixfold dispositions or qualities, are what? Shama, Dhamma, Uparama, or Uparati, Titiksha, Shraddha, Samadhana. So you have to think about these and remember them, memorize them, because they create understanding. This is what this Tattva Bodha is about, actually. They create for you like a scaffolding in your mind, a structure in your mind, which will continually be added on to. So this is just very basic, pervasive vocabulary. And so as you know, as you're gaining this vocabulary, you're getting a scaffolding. And in the Hindu tradition of learning, what is usually taught is like you memorize the scaffolding, you memorize that, and then the teacher will unfold it in depth. Because then you have some place for all of this knowledge to hang on to. Right? So you already have something for it to associate to, so it will stick in your memory. So that's why we're doing this text first, even though you might think it's a beginner's text, but it's the basic scaffolding that you need to have inside of yourself to be able to teach or to have so much knowledge available to you. Right? Even with the Brahma Sutras, which is the last thing that is taught, they memorize the whole Brahma Sutras. There's 300, 400, 500, I don't even remember actually how many sutras. It is a lot of sutras. But they will memorize it first. And then each sutra one by one will be unfolded. And then because you understand the sutra, you have the bhasha and the unfoldment gets associated to that. And so it lands there and is held firmly in the mind. I want you to think about it that way, because as a teacher training course, whether you ever teach or not, is another thing. But you will be able to. I want you to have this available to you. You never know to what degree you'll be teaching or not teaching. So let's assume you all will do. Aum Tat Sat. It's the best way to assimilate this knowledge, even if it's like Swami Saralananda when Swami she's living in Hawaii now. She has a little kutia there, nice little place. She likes to teach one student at a time. Honestly, that's her preference. One student at a time. And that's what she does. Very nice. Yeah. But that student gets taught. It's beautiful. Yeah. Anyway. So, etat sadhana chatushtayam. So you have the viveka, vairagya, samadhi shakta, and then the mumukshu code. So these have to be known. Okay? So here it says, etat sadhana chatushtayam. This is the sadhana chatushtaya that we've gone through. Now it says, repeat after me, tattaha tattva vivekasya adhikarinaha bhavanti. So here, tattaha means thereafter, or after that, after one has this sadhana chatushtaya to enough, has good enough viveka, vairagya, etc., good enough. Then after that, and from that point, because nobody comes, I think I've said, nobody comes to the teaching with that sadhana chatushtaya in full maturity. It doesn't happen. It can't happen. Right? Nitya, anitya, vastu, viveka. How can you have nitya? How can you know what is timeless when there's nothing timeless in the creation? Right? But you recognize that everything in the creation is timeless. And you want to know, and may have heard from the Shastra, that the Atma, the Self, that which is Brahman, is Nitya, is free from time. What is that? I want to know. And so that viveka. You may have an idea of it, but you don't know. You do know that all of this is timeless. It's time bound. Okay. So here it says, after that, thereafter, as a result of that, the sadhana chatushtaya, tattvasya vivekasya. This is a compound in the genitive singular. For the analysis, the viveka, the discriminative analysis of the tattva, that which is the reality. So, tattva vivekasya adhikarinaha. It can all be for or of, depending upon the context. Then we have adhikarinaha bhavanti. They bhavanti, in the third person plural, they become. Adhikarinaha bhavanti. Then they, after that, they become adhikaris. Adhikarinaha is in the nominative plural from adhikarin. Remember the substantive for adhikari is adhikarin. Adhikarinaha bhavanti. They become adhikaris for the viveka, the discriminative analysis of the tattva, of this reality, which is the subject matter of the tatparaya, the subject matter of the Vedanta. Okay? So, then the question is, repeat after me, tattva vivekaha kaha.
Tattva vivekaha kaha.
What is tattva? What is that tattva viveka? Tattva vivekaha, Nominative, masculine, tattva, vivekaha, the discriminative analysis of the tattva. Kaha, what is that? Tattva, vivekaha, kaha. Repeat that to me. So now he has to answer that. So now we start. Okay. Atma, satyaha.
Atma, satyaha.
Ted, anyat.
Ted, anyat.
Sarvam, mitya.
Sarvam, mitya.
Iti. This is the whole Vedanta in one short little sentence. And each word here, of course, is really important. There's a lot here. First part, Atma Satyaha. It says, the Atma. Atma means the self. The self means me, the I. If I say, I'm going to the store, who is the one? Who is that self? That is the Atma that you probably have mistaken for the body. Yourself, the Atma, is going to the store. Yourself, I am so sad. The Atma has now become sad. Okay? But the Atma really, the Atma, what we mean by the Atma, is that is the one who is in fact yourself. Whether you've loaded it with lots of conditioning adjuncts that we've called upadis or not, nevertheless, the Atma is the self that I refer to as aham, or I. The question now is, who really is this Atma? Who really is this I? So in this sentence, the Shastra, the teaching, starts out by just simply telling you that the Atma is Satyaha. The Atma is real. Now, that should mean not very much. If you're an Ajnani, you're just coming to this teaching for the first time, and the teacher says, the Upanishad says, the Atma is real. Okay. Now, that's called a Pratijna. That's called an initial statement that has to be established. Now, for a statement like that, the Atma is real, we have to know what the Atma is, what Satya means, and then how could that... this Atman that is me be Satya. So we're going to go through and really define all of these terms, and then we're going to really work on it and unfold it. The first thing is, so the Atma, this is Shastric. This is like a Mahavakya. You know, yourself is real. So what is the self? What do I mean by the self? And what do I mean by real? And then it says, second half, also, unknown, tad anyat, other than that. Everything else. Tad anyat sarvam. Sarvam means all. Everyone, everything. Everything other than anyat that. Tad anyat other than that. Satyam. Sarvam. Everything other than that is mitya. Is mitya. So even if we translate mitya, it will have no meaning unless you've learned it. You can translate mitya as apparent. What does that mean? You know. So all of these words need to be understood, defined, and unfolded. Okay. So this is really, at this point, having gone through the whole sadhana chaturshtayam, who is the qualified student, now the teaching of the Vedanta really begins here. So the Atma is Satya, Tad Anyat Sarva Mitya Iti. So let's just work for a while with these terms. Satyam. I'm going to give you some Sanskrit definitions. The most common definition for satyam, which is often referred to when we're talking about absolute reality, which is the nature of yourself, that satyam we call paramarthika satyam. Paramarthika satyam. The absolute reality, the absolute truth. Paramarthika satyam. So satyam, or paramarthika satyam, is called trikala abhadita satyam. Means satyam is that which cannot be negated in the three periods of time. Abhadita, it can't be negated. Trikala, three kala times, three periods of time, trikala, past, present, and future. Abhadita is a negative, is not cannot be negated. Bodhita, it can be negated. Trikala, abhidhita, satyam. Satyam is that which cannot be negated or dismissed in past, present, or future. That's the definition. So that means it's never not here, it can never not be here. No matter how far back in the past you go, it is. In the present, it is. No matter how far into the future you may go, it still is. It's something that is, cannot be negated. That's the basic Sanskrit definition, you know, of that which is paramartika satyam. Mithya, the word mithya, let me give you the definitions of that and then we'll just read through there. Mithya is called sad asadbhyam, sad asadbhyam, anirvachaniya, anirvachaniya, sad asadbhyam, anirvachaniya. Anirvachaniya means that which cannot be, sometimes Swamiji started translating this in this way, that which cannot be categorized as sat, absolute reality, or as asat, non-existence. You can't say that it would, whatever is mithya, could fall under this definition of trikala abhidhita satyam, that which cannot be negated in past, present, and future. In fact, the whole universe doesn't fit into that definition, the paramartika satyam. There's only one thing that meets that standard, and that is the atma. The atma alone is satyam, taranyat sarvam. Everything other than that is mithya. So, mithya, first definition is sat asad bhyam, that means as sat or asat, and nirvachaniya. Nirvachaniya means we can define it as this, we can categorize it as this, we can explain it in this way. Anirvachaniya means we can't put this universe or whatever is defined as mithya into the category of being real, but we can also not put it into the category of being non-existent. The word for non-existent in this framework that we're looking at is called tuccha. Tuccha means it's not here, it is non-existent. Like we use the examples, the horn of a rabbit. You know, rabbits, at least in those days, somebody sent me a picture with a horn on it, a rabbit with a horn on it. So, so I always have to bring that up, just so nobody else does. I've seen a rabbit with a horn on it. In those days, in those days, according to, you know, the seers and those who were writing up all of this, that was an example of something that is absolutely not there. There's no such thing. Another example, there's a city in the sky. We can imagine clouds to look like cities, but there are no cities hanging up there in the sky. At least then, no cities in the sky. And at least back then, you remember these are just drishtantas, they're just illustrations. So they worked at the time. The son of a barren woman isn't there. There's no such thing. Of course, now we have all kinds of tricks we can do. But at that time, there is no such thing. That is not possible. You can look at it, if we can describe the woman who has never had a child, does not have a child, then that child is not there. In whatever way they could have used to have a child, they have not done that. How we talk about it now. That child is not there. There is not an adopted child. There is not one child that's come from an in vitro process. There's not a child that's had a natural regular birth or a cesarean birth or all the ways we could have a child. That child is not there. Okay. That child is non-existent. The rabbit with horns is non-existent. The city in the sky is non-existent. And non-existent here means you cannot experience it. It's not available for your experience in any way. It's not available for your pramanas. Any of the pramanas you have available to you, it is not available for those means of knowledge. That is what we mean by non-existence. It is simply not there. This is important. We'll see why, but it is important. It does not exist. Now, if the definition of mithya is sad asadbhyam nirvachaniya, we say it cannot be described as satyam, as that which exists in all three periods of time, nor can we say it doesn't exist, because we experience it. If we experience it, and even if it has some usefulness, even we experience it, we see it, we talk about it, it just doesn't fit either one of those definitions, and so we have this middle category. Okay, everybody see so far? These categories are what we call ontological terms. They're meant to talk about the nature of something in terms of its reality, in terms of its being. It describes the nature of something. It's not a word that has an existence itself. There's no satyam walking around, you know, or there's no mithya walking around, and of course there's no asat, tucham, walking around. It is ontological. It's something for you to use to define and understand the experiences that you're having, you know. And so in terms of this structure, which is helping you to understand the nature of these things, they're not things in themselves, they're the nature of these things, you know, it's going to be very, very helpful to understand why yourself is trikala abhadita, how it can be that, free from the three periods of time. Why everything in this creation is categorized as mithya, and why the things that you don't know are categorized as tuccha and asat. In some ways, we don't need to know about that, right? Because if it's not here, who cares? I mean, it's not here, we never experience it, it has no impact on us. But this idea of asat or tucham, this conceptual idea, because there is nothing that it even hooks onto, that's the point. That's what is asat or non-existent or tucham, which has it's an ontological term for things that are not there. It is very important as bookends to mithya, because it says mithya is not real in the sense that it comes into being and goes out of being. So just think about this now. If you take the definition of asat, of sat, as that which exists in all three periods of time, that means literally that what is satyam doesn't come into being or go out of being. It simply is. You know? There's no beginning to the past. It's like, okay, we'll go clear back to the end of the past, and then there it was. No. Mm-hmm. Or there it wasn't. There's no end. The past goes on into an infinite regress. There's no end to it. The future goes into the future, an endless future. You have no idea where there's any type of border there at all. Okay? And so the one who has no beginning, who has not come into being at any time and has not gone out of being at any time, has got to be free from time. But we're not talking about asat, because you can say the same thing about tucham or asat. Asat has not come into being at any time, and it will never go out of being at any time, because it doesn't exist. But here, with satyam, the reality, that which is existence itself, the sat-chit conscious being, existence itself, your being, yourself, we're talking about something which is, and which has not come into being or gone out of being at any time. That means the Atma, which is Satyam, is free from time. Tucham, no existence at all. What is Mithya is something that we experience, but it has what we call a dependent being. So another definition for mithya, right? For mithya, or mitya, there is always what we call an adhishtana. Without an adhishtana, there is no mitya. So this word adhishtana is a really critical word for even understanding mitya. The adhishtana is that which the mitya depends upon. Mitya, for something to be classified as mitya, it depends on something else for its being. So that's the definition of mitya. It depends on something else for its being, not 50% or 80% or 99.99%. It depends 100% on something else for its being. That's the definition of mitya. It can't be defined as satyam or as tucham. It is defined as sat, as sat, right? Sat as sat bhyam and nirvachaniya. It cannot be categorized in as sat or satyam, nor can it be categorized as non-existent because we experience it. Okay? So these ontological terms are important for us because we have to know in order to understand and to recognize satyam and mitya in reference to myself, we first have to understand what we mean. Who are you, really? What if you define yourself as mitya? Something that is mitya. That is definitely not who you are. So let me just spend a little bit of time giving some mitya stories, some examples of what is actual mitya, okay? So that we can know. And there are so many examples within the creation, within this creation that is bound, every moment, of course, is bound by time. So almost anything you see is an example of mitya. Or I guess we would say everything you see is an example of mitya. But we have so many drishtantas. Drishtanta, this word drishtanta, another really common word for your vocabulary list, it just means an illustration. In the teachings, we have many drishtantas that are fundamental to the teaching because these drishtantas, these illustrations, have stood the test of time. The darshtanta is what the drishtanta, the illustration, is pointing to. So we use them all the time in the teaching. I'll give you like one example is the sun. Well, I guess we don't have to worry about that. The sun is, in a sense, self-shining. No one needs to illumine the sun. So it's self-luminous. You don't need to bring in another sun to light it up, right? And so we can say the self is self-luminous like the sun. That's a drishtanta. So as you're unfolding the nature of the self, this drishtanta can be very useful. No drishtanta that you use is going to be perfect because it's a drishtanta and it's not actually the self, of which there is only one of, and that one does not exist within time and space. You can understand it because it happens to be yourself, right? But it's not an object in time and space, and yet we have these wonderful illustrations that we can use to help the student kind of get it. Like, I think the sun is an excellent one, you know, because in two ways, the sun illumines everything. It doesn't, when the sun is there, whatever falls in its wake is illumined. But the sun isn't saying, let me illumine everything. Okay, I'm coming up now, let me light up everything. I can do it. Let me just light up everything. No, it's nature. As the sun rises, everything is illumined because that is the swabhava. That's the very nature of the sun. So this self-luminosity, you know, and the fact that the sun really isn't performing any karma, it's not a karaka, a doer, that is performing the karma of lighting up the world. It simply does that by its own nature. So this drishtanta of the sun has some very powerful, is an example of these two very, very, very powerful understandings, you know, as an example of these things, because yourself also does nothing. It's not like the Atma says, uh-oh, here comes a vritti. Okay, let's get to work, everybody. Let's light up this vritti. Let's light up this thought, you know. Or I'm going to turn off the lights right now. No. It is the luminary. That is its nature. It's the very nature, right? Like the sun. Yeah. So these things, the freedom from kartritvam, from doership, and just if your essential nature, because of your essential nature, everything is known. Because everything exists within you, every experience that you have is automatically known. Every vritti, we can say like this, every vritti that takes place, it is known, not because it's self-evident, but because of the knownness, the self-evident nature of the self. So these drishtantas help us so much. Another one we often use, we've got the sun, and is space. Space is all-pervasive. Of all of the five elements, the most subtle of the elements is space. Now, it has depth. It has depth and dimension. But it doesn't have duality. There's not a, in terms of its own, from its own standpoint. It's homogeneous, you know. Like the self is just one consciousness. Satchit, one conscious being. The space is just space, that's all. It's not a red space or a black space or a subtle space or a non-subtle space. It is just space, the space that we experience in the world. And everything exists in that space without touching it or harming it or staining it in any way. You can't cut it, you can't burn it. There's in the Bhagavad Gita, this verse. You can't cut it, you can't burn it, you can't dry it, you can't wet it. All of the elements simply exist within it without harming it in any way. And it pervades everything. And so you have, this is an example, so you have a pot, and that pot is full of pot space. Okay? So now the pot space in this pot, if I move it from point A to B and back, have we just ripped a hole in the space? You know? No. Is there really any pot space? Is there any pot space? Is the pot holding the space, or it's moving the space? Or is it moving through the space? And since the space is homogeneous, right? The space over here is exactly the same as the space over here. You think that you're moving, the pot is moving its pot space, but that's not actually happening at all. Okay? So this becomes another very extraordinary example, a drishtanta for yourself. If yourself is the adhishtana, really, if it is the truth from which the one satchit conscious being from which the whole creation has come, there's no place in the creation. It's itself subtler than space. There's no place in the creation, you know, that is away from the self. Like, for instance, if you have an imagination, there's no place in that imagination that is away from you, from the satchit of your being. You have an imagination and, I've got to get into that little space over there, the imagination. No, the whole imagination, you know, exists in you. You're the satchit, the conscious being of the imagination. And so everyone walking around in that, with their upadis, with their little mind and sense organs and everything in their imagination, mm-hmm. you know, as they walk around and enjoy the consciousness, conscious being, does the conscious being belong to the upadis? Or is it the self, the me, of all of the upadis? So now say this little conscious being moves from point A to point B. Is it taking the consciousness with them? Or is there nothing but consciousness? in which the upadis move, like space. So now I've just thrown a double drishtanta at you. Right? Using the imagination, or the imagination, or I could use dream. And then I use the space in the dream, which in which the consciousness exists. See what I mean? So much communication takes place through these use of these drishtantas, even though they can't replace the teaching and they can't replace yourself. But they point, and it makes your mind get what's being said. See what I mean? So drishtanta is an illustration, and the darshtanta is the thing which is illustrated. So important ones. So here, when we're learning about satyam and mithya, instead of using paramarthika satyam, that absolute reality, the trikala abhidhita satyam, that self which this, that which can never be negated in past, present, or future, we're going to use within the creation examples, drishtantas, of relative satyam. It won't be relative mithya, because mithya is mithya, but it will be relative satyam. So, at one example that Swamiji has used, when you get your book, you'll be able to read all these things. We're going to have a reading week. Tetra Bodhi reading week. Swamiji uses the example of a desk. Say you have a desk, a wooden desk. It could be a metal desk. I suppose it could be a plastic desk. It could be a fiberglass desk. It could be a desk made of all kinds of materials. Right? But this desk is a wooden desk. Right? And so now, this desk, if I ask you, what is the desk made of? You say, the desk is made of wood. Okay? So the desk is made of wood. Then you can ask, well, where's the wood and where's the desk? Where's the wood, where's the desk? Is the wood outside of the desk? Is the wood holding the desk? Is the desk holding the wood? Or is the wood inside of the desk? Where is the wood? And so, you would probably roll your eyes. Yeah? Of course the desk is wood. The desk is the wood. But of course the wood could be a lot of different things also. It could be a pile of wood. It could be a wooden chair. It could be a wooden table. In this case, it's a wooden desk. You know? And so the desk is made of wood. We know that the desk is made of wood. But where is the desk and where is the wood? Where do you draw the line? Swamiji will say, how much does the wood weigh? The wood weighs 40 pounds. Okay, how much does the desk weigh? Say, the desk weighs 40 pounds too. The desk weighs 40 pounds, the wood weighs 40 pounds. 40 pounds plus 40 pounds is 80 pounds. And then you have to say, no. The wood weighs 40 pounds. The desk doesn't weigh anything. You mean you have a desk that has no weight? Right? So, how many examples like this do we have? We would say, relatively speaking, what is actually there is what? The wood. The wood is the satyam. That is the content. That is the material. That is what we actually experience. But you know what? We also experience the desk. But the desk has no being at all, zero, apart from the wood. In fact, nothing is there but wood. That's the 100%. The desk is 100% dependent on the wood for it to be there, and yet here it is. It's really nice, nicely put together desk, wooden desk, that is useful. But it is also, besides it being useful, besides we experience it, you know, it is also, in terms of its ontological reality, in terms of its existence, it is mithya. And mithya means you can say this about it. There really is only wood there. We're experiencing the desk. We experience the desk, but the only thing there is wood. And we'll all go, yeah, that's right. And you pick anything, and it's going to be subject to this type of analysis. Another one, Swamiji's used this one for since the beginning of time. Since the beginning of my time, Swamiji. He loves the example of the shirt. Right? What what is the shirt? It's a shirt. But what is the shirt? What is the shirt made of? He'll say, it's made of yarn. Right? The shirt is made of yarn. Yeah. Or no, he'll go like this. Sorry, I missed a step. What? We have to have all the steps. It makes it better. What is the shirt made of? It's made of fabric. Right? The shirt is made of fabric. And you have to say, of course it's made of fabric. It's not a plastic shirt. It's made of fabric. The shirt is made of fabric. But then we have this same interesting relationship. Is the shirt there separate from the fabric? Or is the fabric there? What is the relationship of the fabric to the shirt? That's interesting also. The shirt is dependent totally on the fabric, but the fabric isn't really dependent on the shirt. This is interesting, because I could actually take all the stitching out, and then I just have pieces of cloth that I can't yet call a shirt. I just have the pieces of cloth. Right? But it's the same cloth, it's the same fabric that used to be a shirt. Now it's not a shirt, it's just pieces of cloth. I could even cut those pieces of cloth up, and now these pieces of cloth that were there are now little squares of cloth. The cloth is exactly the same, but the nama rupa goes on changing. The name and form goes on changing. And the name and form, what is its relationship to the fabric? Whether it be the name and form shirt to the fabric, mithya. Whether it be sheets of cloth to the fabric, pieces of cloth to the fabric, the shirt, the shape, mithya, right? It totally depends. The only thing really there is fabric. Little pieces of fabric, those little squares of fabric, what is really there? Fabric. But you experience the square, you experience the bigger pieces, and you experience the shirt, right? But they're not really there. They have no being whatsoever at all, zero, apart from the fabric. See that? Now we have another issue, because we can actually, just in terms of the content of the things that we experience, we can always see that the name and form is dependent on the content. It is the content that is actually there. The name and form depends upon it whole, completely. And that dependence is called mithya. But now with our shirt example, is the fabric satyam or mithya? And we say, the fabric is mithya, because the fabric is just made of yarn, woven together, right? And so, without the yarn, if I were to pull the yarn out, there would be no fabric. So the yarn is actually the reality of the fabric. So it's the yarn that's the satyam, that's what's actually there, and it is appearing. That's why sometimes we say, we translate mithya as appearance. This yarn is appearing now, right? As the fabric. If you use a word like that, you really have to, I'm kind of careful of those kind of words, but it's appearing means that You're taking it to be something, but actually all that is there in reality, the satyam, or the only thing there, is yarn. But then is the yarn really satyam? You have to say, well, the yarn is really small threads that are woven together. That's what makes it yarn. And so the yarn also then is mithya, because it is comprised of these small pieces of thread woven together, which is what is actually there. And so now this yarn is mithya, and the little threads, woven together threads, become the satya. This process goes down to molecules, atoms, quarks, and made up smaller particles, anything that takes up space, right? Anything that takes up space has a content, or you can't experience it. If any nama rupa, anything that can be differentiated from something else is mithya, because it has a content, it has something which allows it to have a border. It doesn't say whether it's a ball or a cloud, or it doesn't make any difference what it is. The nama rupa, the name and form, depend upon that content for it to be. The nama rupa has no being apart from the content. That's the satyam mithya relationship that goes on to into infinite regress. In the creation, you can use anything as an example. I'm just looking at content now, how the content of anything, it is the satyam of the thing that you're talking about. But the problem is that content itself in the creation breaks down into smaller and smaller parts. And there's an infinite regress to the smallest imaginable part. As long as it takes up space, it's got content. You can use another example of what we call conglomerates. Like we give a name to this. I always use a lamp for some reason, even at home I do. This is a lamp. That's the nama, lamp. But is this the lamp? Is this the lamp? Is this the shade the lamp? What here is actually the lamp? For anything I point to, you're going to say, no, this is the base, this is the cord, this is the on and off switch. You know, this is the, what do you call this? No, a lampshade. And then we don't know what's inside. It's really interesting. Can't see inside. There's some kind of luminary inside there. We have names for all of it. But this is a lamp. What part is the lamp? All of it is the lamp. But the shade is not the lamp. Right? The base is not the lamp. This is not the lamp. All of it together, when you put them all together in a particular order, we call it lamp. You know? Another problem. That this is a word, and it is a useful word for a bunch of things that have been put together in an organized way, and we label that lamp. But in terms of there actually being a lamp, there is no such thing as a lamp. There is a conglomeration, a conglomerate of things that are put together that we give that nama to, but we can't find the thing itself. So that's another way of talking about satyam mithya. This is mithya because there's something there that we experience, but we can't find the thing itself. Because the thing itself is not there to be found, it is rather made of many, many things. See what I mean? So the whole universe, when thing like this, the whole universe being bound by time and space, existing within time and space, where space is one of the five elements, everything in the universe is bound by time, is coming into being, going out of being. Everything in the universe also exists differentiated from other things. Even space itself is differentiated from the four other elements. Space is not fire, it's not water, it's not, am I living out, fire, water, it's not earth, it's not air. All these things exist in it, but it's differentiated. So anything that you're differentiating, you know, is defined by what it is not. And then that particular nama rupa has to have a content. It goes on and on and on like this. So just within the world, what do you have to understand in terms of these two words, satyam, mitya? That is that satyam, right, is that which is there, and mitya as the adhishtana. These are the words I want you to have. Satyam is there as the adhishtana, and mitya is that which depends upon it 100% for its being. Do you understand? Adhishtana is an important word. I'll be defining it over and over. But adhishtana is a word that we use in reference to mitya. It is that which mitya depends upon. When we use these drishtantas, these illustrations, like the clay pot, the pot is mitya. The clay is satyam. There's only clay there, but here's the pot that we experience. Right? The rope snake, these are examples of satyam mitya. The rope snake, the snake is mitya. The rope is satyam. These are examples within the relative world, but the satyam mitya relationship is there. Now the question, we'll pick this up in our next class, because I don't want to go over an hour. In the satyam mitya relationship, is there one or two? In the clay pot, is there a pot and a clay? What do you say? Is there a pot and clay? No. It's non-dual. In the rope snake, is there a rope and snake? No. In the desk, wood, is there wood and a desk? No. So that is why exactly the satyam mitya relationship, when we say Advaita Vedanta, there is only one without a second here. It's because of this satyam mitya relationship. This entire creation is mitya. The Atma alone, the self alone, is satyam. So let's just read this. Just repeat after me. We have these words. Atma satyah.
Atma satyah.
Tad anyat sarvam.
Tad anyat sarvam.
Mitya iti.
Mitya iti.
That's the Vedanta. The self is satyam. Everything else, tad anyat sarvam, is mitya. Advaita. Because satyam and mitya don't make two. Yeah. Om
Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantih Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
It's that song tonight, with some budgets. Thought I'd throw that in. So you're prepared. I need to call in.